Hello, this is Eileen, and I will be reading the Pantograph for Wednesday, September 6th, 2017. Beginning with the first article, students, faculty join pro-DACA rally at ISU. In Normal, Carlos Flores is entering his final semester at Illinois State University, and said his education wouldn't have been possible without protection from the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, DACA. I was brought to America as a one-year-old, and I've been living here for 21 years, said Flores of Bridgeview. With 800,000 of us under DACA, we're contributing a lot to society. Flores joined a rally in support of DACA at ISU on Tuesday. More than 100 students and faculty attended after news that the Trump administration formally announced the eventual retraction of DACA, a program that was provided that has provided nearly 800,000 young immigrants a reprieve from deportation and the ability to work legally in the U.S., receive a driver's license, and earn an affordable education. ISU student Cindy Alvarez of Texas helped organize the rally that included Illinois Wesleyan University students. We want to affirm that for students who are currently protected by DACA, they belong. This is their space. Those of us who are born citizens will protect them, said Alvarez. Attendees circled the quad, shouting "Defend DACA," and waving signs that said, "Nobody is illegal." A second rally hosted by DACA supporters took place Tuesday afternoon in Uptown Normal. ISU President Larry Deitz stood with students at the event. "Our job is to teach and provide service to students who meet the academic criteria. The good news is there are 6 months for Congress to address this. Hopefully that will alleviate any anxiety students or families may feel now," said Deitz. Trump is giving Congress a six months to come up with a legislative fix before the government stops renewing permits for people already covered by the program. A statement released from Deitz after the rally said ISU will continue to admit, serve, and support undocumented students as authorized by law. Several ISU faculty attended to represent the committee assisting undocumented student achievement, CASA. Marinelli Castillo Zuniga, an ISU Spanish professor, joined the event with her class. "People protected under DACA were brought here as babies. It wasn't their decision," said Castilla Zuniga. "Like everyone, they have dreams of getting an education, a well-paying job, a family." Castilla Zuniga added that it's often forgotten that DACA does not just apply to Mexican immigrants, but to children who came to America from any country. "I've had some immigrant students in my class. They are passionate. I can see in their eyes that they want to do well. The only thing they should have to worry about right now is their homework and studying for tests. They shouldn't have to worry about losing their education and dreams," she said. IWU student Tayeba Ahmed of Hanover Park came to the ISU rally with a group of friends. "I have friends and their siblings who would be affected if DACA was to end. We came here because we want to make a difference and raise our voices," said Ahmed. Rally leaders encouraged the group to call lawmakers to voice their support of DACA. The Obama administration created the DACA program in 2012 as a stopgap as it pushed unsuccessfully to a broader immigration overhaul in Congress. U.S. Representative Adam Kinzinger, a Canahan Republican, said in the statement that he voted to support DACA because "I believe these children who only know America to be their home deserve an opportunity to be here legally." With that said, Congress now has an opportunity to act on immigration reform, and we have the support here to do it, said Kinzinger. It's critical that we act on permanent legislative solution that allows these immigrants, individuals who have come out of the shadows and contribute to our society and economy, to stay here legally. U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth, Democrat of Illinois, also responded to the DACA news. Dreamers and DACA recipients are doctors, teachers, students, and service members. They have mortgages and jobs. They know only one nation, the United States, which is where they were raised. To end the program that allowed these patriots to come out of the shadows and more fully contribute to this country is irresponsible and heartless, she said in a statement. YWCA McLean County called the removal of DACA racial profiling, xenophobia, and bad public policy in a statement. We are outraged that this promise is being broken and that those who came to this country as children will be criminalized and driven underground. The next article, parking garage eyed for library. Panel project may stimulate downtown in Bloomington. The city's parking garage at Market and Monroe Streets potentially could be a new location for a public library and Connect Transit's downtown bus transfer station. The ideas were raised Tuesday at the Downtown Task Force discussion about potential catalyst projects to reinvigorate the city's core. I think it's an excellent idea, said Connect Transit Board Chairman Mike McCurdy. I think transit would be able to deliver those people directly to the library, which I think is an opportunity for the library. And it gives our customers a better place to wait for the next bus. Currently, the Front Street Transfer Station Center in front of McLean County Law and Justice Center is not a great situation, he added. It's just a series of shelters. There is not enough space for our buses. That affects our scheduling. McCurdy said the partnering with the city and library could open more opportunities for federal grants and low-interest loans from the Federal Transit Administration. The 2013 Downtown Strategy Plan identified a hotel, YMCA, and public library as potential catalyst projects. In June, both the Bloomington Public Library's Board of Trustees and the majority of the city's aldermen voiced support for expanding the facility at its current site, 205 East Olive Street, on the southeast edge of the downtown rather than closer to the heart of downtown. In the absence of alternatives, that seemed like the safest, most fiscally responsible way to move forward, said the task force chairwoman, Ward 4 Alderman Amelia Burgas. But if we're looking at it from a broader perspective, we have to ask, can you do both a library and catalyst project? And if not, then does it make sense to merge those two by doing a library as a catalyst project in the downtown area? If we can find a project that meets multiple needs and we get more for our money, then I think that's the direction we need to vigorously explore, she added. The task force was created in May to brainstorm ways to move redevelopment downtown forward. Bloomington Community Development Director Tom Dabonier said there is nothing on the table related to the private developer building a hotel or conference center downtown. Task Force member Justin Boyd said he would like to see a hotel built at the former Front End Center site in the 100 block of North Center Street because he is tired of seeing the deteriorated state of the building owned by Merle Huff family of Peoria. But he and other task force members, Ward 1 Alderman Jamie Matthey, Carla Rastabadelli, and Bobby Veracella, agreed with Barragas about the Market Street garage proposal being more practical. Changing the garage site could boost the number of people visiting downtown, with the library's 1,000 visitors daily and about 1,300 people who are served each day by the downtown transfer station, Burgas and other officials noted. Robustelli noted the aging municipal garage, which was built in the late 1970s, is past its prime and is costing the city a lot of money to maintain. I think it was 4 or 5 years ago that the council allocated $500,000 to just keep the garage workable, said Robustelli. Given the garage is at least 15 or 20 years beyond its life cycle, do we continue to Band-Aid fix it? Task Force member Ward 9 Alderman Kim Bray said the council and library board should be consulted to see if there's a majority support to move the library's expansion to the municipal garage site. Our biggest concern is, after doing our reports and studies, the expansion project is just put on the shelf, said the library board president Alex Cardona. We have a need for it because our current building has repair or maintenance needs that are pretty expensive. We can't just let the building sit. In 2015, the library board hired the Farnsworth Group at $80,500 to conduct a study for the library's expansion at its current location, and Farnsworth came up with the 3 conceptual site plans. Estimated cost to expand the current facility or construct a new building at the current library site range from $21 million to $31 million. So hope the newly minted partners Mary Simon and Abby Real, who have teamed up to raise a new Conklin Players Barn in Goodfield using salvaged remnants of the once disabled by an August tornado 2 years ago. In a Labor Day Facebook posting, Simon timed the announcement to a red-letter date in Conklin history. It was Labor Day 1975 when Chaunce and Mary began working on the Barn Dinner Theater in Goodfield. So it's only fitting that today we share the exciting news. The key element? Simon's joining forces with Real, a former Conklin employee who began bussing tables at the high school, then worked her way up to waitress and stage performer. Together, they plan to rebuild the barn from the ground up, using unclaimed wood from the 76-year-old cattle sales barn. It has been christened Barn 3. The news comes on the heels of Simon's early July announcement of the players' farewell season at Five Points Washington, where the troupe has been performing a limited season of one weekend shows for the past 2 years. I can't afford to produce any more. I just don't have the funds to continue, she told the Pantograph in a July 2nd story. All of that has changed with the new partners' involvement. Once I made that decision to close at Five Points, Abby called with the new idea, said Simon. Amazing, isn't it? The Lord works in mysterious ways. Timing is everything, she added, her new partner added. The majority of the project will be out of my own pocket, said Riel, who Simon has known since she was a toddler. The banks have requested at least $100,000 down to secure the construction loan, she said. I don't have that kind of money, just lying around. Plus, we are purchasing the adjoining brick house to complete the parcel and reunite the barn with the original farm. Simon said an ongoing legal battle with the insurance company that denied her claim for the 2015 weather damages is in discovery and depositions. It is progressing. The house will be incorporated into Barn 3 as not only a theater, but a home for weddings, community events, musical artists, comedians, and more. Real said construction will begin when $100,000 is reached via what is billed as a barn-raising campaign, seeking donations of any size via www.thebarn3.com. Since the new venture is a for-profit organization, gifts are not tax-deductible. We have financial support from the banking parts of our projects, added Simon. But we need financial support from our loyal supporters to secure the construction loan. Once that is in place, we will be in full reaction to reopen November-December 2018 with the Best of Barn Christmas. The partners say they hope that local business will get on board via donations that will serve as free marketing via sidewalk stones, program advertising, and other perks. I think the secret to success is keeping the venue full of activity and making sure that we're meeting the needs of all ages in our community, said Real. We both have the same work ethic and energy, added Simon. Abby is the only one I would partner with on this huge project, and Rebuild, her vision is wonderful. The next article, Miller hearing moved to October in Eureka. A Bloomington woman sentenced to 8 years in prison for killing her husband will have to wait until next month for a hearing to consider reducing her sentence. Sarah Miller pleaded guilty in May to second-degree murder in the stabbing death of her husband, Mark Miller. She was sentenced July 18th, but in August asked Judge Michael Stroh to reduce her sentence. Stroh was scheduled to hear the case Tuesday in Woodford County Circuit Court, but Miller was not there. She is still in the Logan Correctional Center, said Woodford County State's Attorney Greg Binger at the beginning of the scheduled hearing. I just called the Department of Corrections at Logan, and they said they had never received the paperwork to transport her back here. Before inmates can be transported, the DOC must receive a writ of habeas corpus, a court order to the agency holding someone in custody to deliver the inmate to court. It is the responsibility of the defendant or defendant's attorney to initially file the paperwork. Once it is received by the court, the state's attorney's office is responsible for filing the paperwork with the DOC. Court documents indicate Miller's attorney, Stephanie Wong, filed a motion to reconsider the sentence on August 3rd. On August 7th, Wong filed the writ of habeas corpus paperwork. A certified copy was sent to Minger's office the same day. I believe it is my office that is responsible, Minger said. I questioned my staff, and I am not sure where the mistake happened, but it is a big miscommunication on our part, and I will accept the blame for it. Stroh rescheduled the hearing for 3 p.m. October 3rd. I apologize about this, but we will do this at that time, Stroh told those in attendance that included about a dozen people. Miller was eligible for a sentence ranging from time served plus 4 years probation to 20 years in prison. She was given 30 days to appeal the 8-year sentence. Wong plans to argue that the penalty is too severe. 8 years is excessive in considering the nature of the facts and circumstances of the crime and the mitigating and aggravating factors presented, she said in the paper filed in court last month. Testimony at an earlier hearing indicated Miller had plans to walk home from a rural Carlock campground after her husband threatened to put her in the river. Witnesses testified the couple argued that evening, and at one point they struggled while Sarah Miller had a knife. During the struggle, the knife blade cut Mark Miller near the heart and liver. He later died at Advocate Broman Medical Center in Normal. The next article, gunman receives 40-year sentence. Williams likened to Godfather for fight over gift of a coat in Bloomington. Darvell Williams' need to settle a score with a man over a coat could have ended the lives of several innocent victims traveling on a busy Empire Street when he fired 8 shots in November, a judge said Tuesday, before sentencing Williams to 40 years in prison. Williams, 30, was convicted in July of the attempted murder of Willie Love over an alligator-skinned coat his friend either sold or gave away. First Assistant State's Attorney Adam Grist said letters of support for Williams were reminiscent of Don Vito Corleone, the fictional character in The Godfather, whose public displays of generosity were overshadowed by acts of public vengeance against his enemies. He gave Willie Love the coat off his back, and when he didn't reciprocate, he went to kill him, said Grist, and sent a message to others what he would do to those who crossed him. Bullets that Williams intended for Love hit a mailbox, a passing car, a window at a Lowe's store, and another car where a store employee was on her lunch break. No one was injured in the incident, November 26th, in the 2100 block of East Empire Street. Only by the grace of God did he not kill multiple people, said Grist, before asking for 35 years on the attempted murder charge that carried a term of 6 to 30 years, with an additional 20 additional years for using a weapon. Defense attorney Brian McElderney said he agreed with much of Grist's statement about the incident. The defendant made a terrible decision on November 26, 2016. He threatened people at random who could have been harmed, but thank God were not, he said. McElderney asked for 28 years, arguing that Williams worked, has a family, and is certainly capable of rehabilitation. In a statement to the judge, Williams apologized to the victims. It was not my intention to hurt anybody, said Williams, adding that he took issues with the state's decision to charge him with attempted murder. In remarks before he imposed the sentence, Freitag called the shooting mind-boggling and unnecessary. After the hearing, Grist said the state made no effort to negotiate a plea agreement in the shooting incident, a rarity in the criminal justice system, in order to make an example of a weapons case. A serious sentence sends the message that gun violence is taken seriously, said Grist. I hope our community joins us in refusing to be a community that accepts gun violence as the norm, said the prosecutor. Williams is required to serve 85% of the sentence. He received concurrent 8-year terms for aggravated discharge of a weapon and 3 years for possession of a weapon with a defaced serial number. The next article. Counsel told Normal faces tough financial future. In Normal, finance manager Andrew Hoon had bad news Tuesday for Normal City Council. This is probably, in my tenure, the most difficult year we've faced, he said, of the town's 2018-19 fiscal year, which will start in April. But we're going into it in a strong position, and we have a strong budgeting process in place. He pointed to lost revenue from the now-defunct Metrozone revenue-sharing agreement with the City of Bloomington, a new state fee for collecting local sales tax, rising pension costs, and decreasing revenue streams as causes for concern as the town plans its next year of revenue and spending. Among those falling revenue streams are state income tax, which is hurt by shrinking local workforce, utility tax revenue, which is declining due to residents reducing use of landline phones, cable television, electricity and gas, and sales tax, which the town is collecting only slightly more of despite a 1% point rate hike effective January 1, 2016. Without that increase, we actually had a 1.2% increase last year and a 3.9% decrease this year, said Hoon. This tracks closely to workforce. The town will lose $1.2 million per year because the city of Bloomington opted to end the Metro Zone Agreement, a deal to share tax revenue and expenses related to commercial and industrial properties on Bloomington Normal's west side. The state's sale tax fee will cost the town $300,000 per year. That fee, which was part of the new state budget, is assessed to municipalities by the state, which collects sales tax and funnels them to the local governments. The state also sets pension costs paid by local governments. Hoon's comments were part of an annual financial trend and condition report presented to the council. Other negative economic indicators included declining use of Central Illinois Regional Airport and Uptown Station Amtrak, and a shortfall in the town's sewer fund, which will be bolstered by the substantial rate hikes through 2023. Positive indicators included property value, which was up 3.1% over the previous year, unemployment rate, which fell nearly 2 points to 3.8%, and property tax rates where normal continues to be lower than seven large downstate cities despite a small hike last year. On balance, it's a very positive report, but clearly we have some financial headwinds that we will work through, said City Manager Mark Peterson. This gives us plenty of fair warning about the choices we're going to have to make up here, said City Council Member Kevin McCarthy. And the LIHEAP applications are taken in Bloomington. Mid-Central Community Action will begin taking applications by appointment for the Low Income Home Energy Assistance Program, LIHEAP, from October 2nd to May 31st, or until the funds are exhausted. The focus is gas, heat, and electric services. Payment amounts are based on household size and 30-day income. Call for an appointment on or after October 2nd at 309-829-0691 in McLean County and 815-844-1169 in Livingston County. Email appointment requests beginning October 2nd can be sent to LIHEAP at McLean@mccainc.org for McLean County and LIHEAP at LIVCO@mccainc.org for Livingston County. Responses to emails and appointment requests will not begin until October 2nd. Okay, that's all I have for the first half of the pantograph. I will take a brief break and be right back.